Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 162. We're here on a Tuesday night, but there aren't no bloom boards, folks, as we're getting you ready for the 2025 Too Early Meatball Draft Champions Draft, year three. So we're going to preview that for you, talk some recent news and more. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
We're hanging in there. We're piecing this thing together, digging out. We over the weekend we had a moderate flood in the basement here of Bubba Bloom North Studios, and we had a water heater leak, so a lot of the water went into my podcast room. I podcast in the basement right next to the water heater, so a lot of wet carpet pads trying to dry all that out. Should be good by draft time tomorrow. We had the carpet pad out in the sun today. Got those Oregon Rays, and it's recovering. So I'm doing all right. All things considered, I guess. No. Electronics and the Xbox were damaged. So the important stuff.
The dynasty lives on. That's all that matters.
The Huskers can still thrive on a week to week basis.
That is good to hear. Hopefully they can get back on the field shortly and get that train rolling and see where things go. But, we're going to cover some recent news here and then kind of do a roughly, it's like a kind of all over the board, like a preview for 2025 just for the draft. A ton will change when we actually preview it in a couple months. Like, that's the fun part of this draft. Like, we're going to look back at what happened early last year, kind of give our predictions of what we think the first round kind of looks like. And so much more. There'll be a lot of fun stuff to talk about there. But before we get to that, Ryan, let's talk about some news and notes. And some big, big players are hitting the IL at the wrong time of the season here. I'll start with the big blow. Austin Riley of the Atlanta Braves. Just as if the Braves could take more damage to their roster, Austin Riley has a fractured hand. He's out 6 to 8 weeks, which, if you do the quick math, pretty much ends his season, at least fantasy-wise. So Austin Riley's gone. Luke Williams is supposed to get a chance. They might be signing Gio Urshela, it looks like, to fill in at third base. The Braves are trying to piece this together as if they're in a 15-team main event league. So how are you looking at this Austin Riley situation?
Yeah, they actually picked Urshela started tonight at third base, so I guess that's the patchwork solution for Austin Riley. Brutal blow. Austin Riley was kind of turning things around. I think we had talked about him a couple times in various Bloom Board episodes recently. Someone who had been starting to kind of power up 10 home runs in the second half since July in 267. So unlike Matt Olson, was starting to show some signs, but this obviously ends the season for Riley. One of those, Austin Riley was a pretty firm second round, top 20-ish pick in drafts last year. I think that falls, in the spirit of our 2025 preview theme for tonight. Still think Austin Riley probably stays third, fourth round, something like that. I don't think we discount. I think folks are smart enough to know the track record here coming off a down year. And even when we saw signs of Austin Riley starting to hit a little bit in the second half. So it'll be a little bit cheaper next year than this past season, but definitely a disappointing one for Austin Riley.
Yep. Caps off, like you said, a disappointing season. Him, Pete Alonso, was a fun discussion point in the second round. Get your power right here. See where it can go. Neither one really, got there. We'll talk about Matt Olson as well. There's a lot of those kind of oopsie situations here. We'll get to a couple more of these guys. But like Michael C says here, one of my best teams led by Riley, Cattell, Glasnow, fun times. Yeah. Tyler Glasnow we'll talk about in a bit as well. So we'll go to Tejo Marte. So let's jump to a pitcher first, Hunter Green. This happened over the weekend. He hits the IL with elbow soreness, MRI clean, but he's getting a second opinion. I always hear that, but he's getting a second opinion. And it's been about at least two days, if not 3 days, since the MRI took place. And he still has not got a second opinion, or at least not reported on a second opinion yet. So it makes you wonder if there's a lot of swelling going on or something else in this elbow stiffness. Regardless, there's no timetable at the moment. How are you assessing this situation for fantasy?
I guess you wait until we know, just given how good Hunter Green has been this year. That's kind of the short-term outlook. I think the longer term, or the maybe the more macro level takeaway and leading into 2025. As Hunter Green was kind of famously, there's a tweet from Will Harris, who's a great Twitter follow, not the pitcher, the Twitterer Will Harris at sandwich underscore pick, who had a screenshot of the top 10. I don't know, you've probably seen this, Bubba, a screenshot of the top 10 fastball velocity starting pitchers from last season. And 9 of the 10 were on the IL as of May 1st. The only one who wasn't was Hunter Green, and Hunter Green made it this far before falling apart. But that list: Bobby Miller, Hunter Green, Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, Grayson Rodriguez, Spencer Strider, Otani, McClanahan, Jesus Luzardo, and Garrett Cole. So, like, all those guys are still pretty much on the IL with still pretty severe injuries, maybe outside of Garrett Cole. You kind of wonder, does this factor into how you draft starting pitchers next year? I think Joe Arrico put out a 2025 version of that same list and some interesting names that we'll probably talk about tonight. But it was just interesting that Hunter Green was kind of this last one who could make it this far into the season throwing as hard as he does. The human body, I think, does have limits.
It does have limits, and it really sucked because I know myself, and I believe it was you as well, we were kind of like, we're not on Hunter Green because the home road splits are pretty severe. He gets blown up at home, and this year he really kind of honed things in and was pretty darn solid everywhere and putting together an amazing fantasy season for those that took part in bringing Hunter Green here. And with the Reds out of it, they really don't need to bring him back this year, so that makes things interesting as well. So I want to keep an eye on that situation. For now, though, it looks like it's going to be Julian Aguilar is the way I say it. There's no L. It looks like Aguilar, but it's Aguilar. Was called up to join the rotation.
You don't pronounce the L, or there is no L?
There is no L. It confuses me because I've always seen Aguilar. I've never seen Aguilar in my life. And I know a lot of Latino, Hispanic people. Maybe he's not Latino, Hispanic, and I apologize, but it just threw me off. But he threw 4 innings, 2 earned runs, 2 strikeouts in his major league debut. But in the minors, 22 starts between AA and AAA this year. He had a 3.79 ERA, but only 95 Ks and 116 in a third inning. So see how that plays out into good old Great American Small Park. James Oss in this chat says, Riley, Yelich, Fairbanks, Joe, and River Ryan all just went down in my biggest money auction league where I'm in a tight battle for first with another guy.
Oh,
that's rough, dog. That's
tough. That's tough. At least you made it like this far with those guys, but that's brutal. All in the span of like a week or two.
You just got I'll keep it PG on the show, but yeah, that's tough. I'm sorry, buddy. No fun there. We will talk about Tyler Glasnow real quick. Glasnow was put on the IL over the weekend. We kind of talked about it during the Fab show last week that they scratched Bobby Miller because they might need a pitcher for the weekend. Little did we know it meant Tyler Glasnow was going to the IL with elbow soreness, and it didn't even get announced till like 30 minutes before the game. It was that kind of like last minute, like, oh, he could probably go, but let's not push it thing is what they're saying. Let's see where that really goes when it's 15 days is up and if Glasnow returns or not. I'm staying optimistic on this one, Ryan, but any thoughts on Glasnow on the IL with Bobby Miller taking a spot? And that's going about as well as planned.
Yeah, exactly. And Walker Buehler didn't, or at least so far through the game against the Mariners tonight, hasn't looked that great either. So big blow for the Dodgers if it's a bad one. Most importantly, you know, screw the fantasy outlook, the outlook for the Dodgers. We got a beer bet on the over-under for Tyler Glasnow, my man, of 150 innings. And Tyler Glasnow is at 134. If he stays under, I win. If he goes over, you win. How are you feeling about that? Do you think Glasnow pitches? It would probably be 3 more starts to get to 16 innings.
I think we get Glasnow again. So I think I still got this one coming. I'm gonna stand tall on this one and say yes for Team Bubba on this one. You're gonna be buying me a high noon at the bar.
It'll be one that I'm glad to buy. I would like to see Glasnow keep pushing and keep going. So we'll see. But obviously an obvious hold for fantasy purposes, Glasnow until we get more info, unless it's really bad.
Yeah, I'm staying pretty optimistic on this one, but yeah, we shall see. Next up here, Zach Eflin on Tuesday evening, kind of out of nowhere, hits the IL with shoulder inflammation. Eflin's been outstanding since the Orioles traded for him, one of the better trades the Orioles made. But Eflin's going to be down for at least 15 days, and that brings Cade Povich back up, who I was pretty bummed about because I actually wrote him up in my fab column. Then Sunday morning, he got sent back down to AAA, so I took him out of my fab column, and now he's back up here. So that's fun, but any thoughts on this one?
No, I'm just glad the Orioles kind of covered themselves getting that starting rotation depth at the trade deadline and getting Trevor Rogers, bringing him into the whole fold. So they're totally good without Zach Eflin. Kidding.
No, you're not.
that was I never understood that. I still, maybe he'll be good. Maybe Trevor Rogers will be good again next year, but I don't think instantly that Baltimore saw something that Miami didn't. And yeah, it's been bad. So Cade Povich is interesting, right? Had a really good last start and then got sent back down. So, I mean, admittedly before that, at least in the majors, the control for Cade Povich was admittedly really bad, but this is a prospect with a fair amount of pedigree. And we see this all the time, especially with pitchers down again, up again, down again, up again. And at some point it clicks. So Baltimore's going to need Cade Povich. If he pitches well, he's staying in that rotation for the foreseeable future. So wouldn't be surprised to see Cade Povich as one of the top fab ads this coming weekend, depending how he does this week.
Yeah. I'll be very intrigued by his start this week. And definitely interested because Ben and I talked about, and I'll have to go back and look, there's some bad schedules coming up here. So some single start pitchers will be a lot better than some two start guys pretty soon. So we'll see how that goes.
It's Houston, and then it would be like at the Dodgers, and then either at Colorado or the White Sox for Povich. First few the White starts Sox
back. Would be pretty nice. Our buddy Anthony Gialdi says, what's the end game for every starting pitcher getting hurt? I mean, is this just how things will be moving forward? It's maddening. Yeah, that's why it's getting to the point where start stocking up on those seventh, eighth inning high leverage dudes and just pray for some ratios, wins, and an occasional or strikeouts, an occasional win right now. That's the way I look at it, because it's not good.
I mean, the new trend seems to be pitch these guys, especially the young guys, four innings or whatever, Garrett Crochet style, maybe Paul Skeens. We'll
maybe
see.
Tarik Skubal too.
Maybe Tarik Skubal. Yep, exactly. This is welcome to September in fantasy baseball. It's wild every year.
Yep, it is. And as Gialdi said, it's bad for the game. It is. It takes away a lot. But, you know, until they start putting in a salary floor, a lot of teams aren't going to give a crap about what they do with their pitching. Because if you look at some of these teams, the Pirates, they've overachieved. White Sox, these are teams in the Tigers, like you expect this to happen type situation. So we'll kind of wait and see where that one goes. Ketel Marte hits the IL with an ankle injury. This was just a matter of time. He sprained the ankle over a week ago. Then he kind of re-aggravated it multiple times until they finally said, you know what, dude, you got to go get this thing healed up. So Ketel Marte to the IL with an ankle sprain. Kevin Newman's supposed to get regular playing time at second base if that intrigues you. But Ketel Marte was a monster, and he's going to be a fun one to see where he goes tomorrow night when we record on our draft on Wednesday.
Exactly, because this was an ankle, which I didn't see the injury, but typically ankle stuff, it's fluky. It's not a muscle. It's something that I don't think I hold much against Ketel Marte for next year. Ketel Marte, according to the Razzball Player Rater, is the number 11th overall player in all of fantasy baseball this year, which has just been pretty wild to see at a time where you and I were taking Tyro Estrada and Zach Gelof. So that was cool. Very interested where Ketel Marte goes. I would guess second, third round. I don't think he goes up into the first, given the track record and probably the regression risk, but I could see him going pretty early for sure.
Yeah, I don't got him at first round, but like him versus Ozzie Albies is a fun discussion point. That's all I'd say. It's a very fun discussion at this point in time, and obviously throughout the offseason. Alex Cobb, it's been fun, dude. It's been fun. Got a couple starts with the Guardians. Now he's back on the IL with a fractured fingernail. The Guardians are hoping it's just the minimum 15 games. So they just need the nail to heal, that he can get back on the mound. So it's nothing structural. It's literally just a nail. That's the positive of this situation. There's just no immediate timetable. And they called up Anthony Gose, who was a reliever, to fill in there. The artist formerly known as an outfielder, Anthony Gose, same guy. But they don't have a starting pitching plan just yet. Looking at Ryan's face, trying to figure out who Anthony Gose is, looks pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't even follow what you were talking about.
Speedster outfielder back in the day. Now he's turned reliever and throws gas.
What?
So, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So They called
Half
him
the time,
up.
So, I just think you're messing with me with these weird facts, but I'll believe you.
So yeah, Alex Cobb the IL. We'll be back soon. Though, is the best way I can put that. Last but not least here, Tampa Bay Rays, Pete Fairbanks. Now this one out with a lat strain, but reports are saying it could be 2 weeks, but everyone's leaning to season ending, essentially, is where this is going. Like it's more severe than some are letting on this one. And when it comes to the Rays, there's really no, it's a committee. Like Yuseta has been pretty good. You got Manuel Rodriguez, you get Colin Pache, Garrett Clevenger stands a chance back there. A lot of people are saying Edwin Yuseta is going to get the first chance at it, but this is the Rays, folks. So if you want to play that game, knock yourself out.
Yeah. I mean, we can all guess and do whatever, but we haven't heard anything from the Rays. And until we actually get a save op and see some kind of tell, we don't really know. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know. So good luck if you're trying to speculate on Rays saves, guys. It's actually interesting, man. Like the last 2 weeks in Fab, there've been a ton of closers available. Yep. And this is one of the situations which is not as fantasy friendly unless they just stick with one guy. So we said I got the save tonight, so maybe that holds. I didn't catch that on Tuesday, but
As Beanable says in the chat, you said I got the save tonight. So
yeah,
there you go on that one. We'll see where it goes. But yeah, it is a good point. Wasn't a lot of closers on the wire necessary early on, but now it's that and catchers. They're both just going crazy over the last couple of weeks. So get it in when you fit in.
Had to fit in your catchers. I get it. I'm actually surprised on this too early rundown. You didn't put catchers anywhere. I'm sure we'll get to them, but
it's the only draft I have where I have it all hidden. It's the only draft. Everybody else knows where I stand on catchers by the time I start drafting again. So it's a little different. It's not as fun, but pretty sure people can have an idea with who to take and hose me on that one as well. So we'll see. And this is a good one because Hector Neris got DFA'd and Beanable says Hodge got the save for the Cubs. And it was down to Hodge and a couple others. So that's interesting as well to see Hodge get the first one. We'll have to kind of keep an eye on that for the next few days and could have some fun fab there too.
Yeah, and Hodge has been really good. This is Porter Hodge. He's 23, 2.15 ERA, sub-1 whip on the season. Had 9 holds, so had been used in somewhat high leverage. So that could be like I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd take Hodge over Uceta, but it all depends on usage, which we don't know. So we got 4 more days to figure it out.
Yeah, 4 more days to think we figured it out before the team screws us again. So we'll have plenty of fun with that. And what else we'll have fun with, Ryan? Drafting a 2025 draft on Wednesday night, everybody. So let's have a little fun preview. And will we preview everything properly? Probably not, because this is literally every year you're kind of in the dark and there's many ways to go about this one. Could you just go free and have fun with it? Some guys legit make projections for this, which is funny because I don't know how you do that, but that's me. So no one should be surprised there. Ryan will have some sort of projections. I know.
I got projections right in front of me, my friend.
So you have like Steve Weimer will have like a whole thing. Like it's pretty wild what everybody comes up with. But before we get into the formats and the teams and start talking about players and strategy, any initial thoughts on the 2025 too early meatball DC?
I mean, really, my biggest thought is I enjoy the hell out of it every year because, as you know, you've been writing recaps and doing daily podcasts every single night for 5 months now. This is a grind. This is a slog. It's refreshing to be able to sit back. I'm going to get some IPAs at some point tomorrow leading up to the draft. Draft 6 p.m. local. Already made family arrangements to block off the calendar, and it's just awesome to be able to sit back, draft totally blind along with everyone else in the room. Like, yes, we have our spreadsheets or your stone tablet or whatever, but we don't have ADP. We don't know where anybody's gonna go, and we all get together on a Zoom and just kind of like shoot the shit and have a great time. So for me, that's the biggest takeaway of this draft. It's just it's a ton of fun to do. It's great for like content in August or whatever, but being able to kind of find a time with 15 others who same exact group as last year to be able to kind of just hang out on a Wednesday night in August is a ton of fun.
Yep, it's an absolute blast. There's 15 of us in that draft room just having a blast going through it all and making fun of each other and thinking we reinvented the wheel when we have no clue when all things are said and done. Because,
yep,
you know, some guys, you know, you're lucky if flat. Usually we do 7 rounds. We're doing 11 rounds this year. So, like I joked about last year, I left after my 7 rounds with Albert Alzolay as my closer, and my first two pitchers were Yuri Perez and Max Scherzer.
Max Scherzer. I remember.
And I'm sixth in this league right now. So it's a lot of fun to kind of see how all the cookie crumbles, as some might say, in this whole deal. So we'll see. But let's get to the fun part here. Let me pull up. There it is. They get 15-team league. It's a draft champions format, 50-round draft and hold format on the NFBC. This is a legit league. This is not, let me repeat, this is not a mock draft, if anybody's curious. We'll draft 11 rounds now, and then we'll pick things up in a slow draft a little later on. But the teams here, the individuals, Steve Weimer, Jason DuPont, John Fish, one Ryan Bloomfield, James Anderson, myself, Ginny Butler, Dan Kenyon, Michael Mager, Dominic, Big Dom, Bullpen Guru, Zachary Waxman, Rob DiPietro, Ryan Roof, Jacob Hlusker, and Ryan Venancio. So very fun room. 14 of us have been here since the beginning. Dom took over for some guy named Brian Slack, who I believe won the main event overall last year. So he peaced out on us, but it's a ton of fun. Like, we have our group chat and everything else going on. So it's a great way to kick off the season, and we'll recap it all next Tuesday as well. But anything else, anybody like Weimer's leading the league, but DuPont's got a top 50 team. And I believe last year, Ryan, our league as a whole was like in the top 10 of leagues or something like that. Some weird stat
I forget the exact, but it was somewhat high up there. And it, I don't know, a lot of variance drafting this early. But
do you remember who won that league by chance?
Yeah, I do. It was you. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I forgot.
Congratulations. Couldn't quite repeat this year, but that's okay. No. You're fighting for a cash spot at least.
Yes, I'm fighting.
One other thing to add, the mechanics of this draft. So obviously the NFBC site is not up for 2025. So we do need to give a couple quick shout outs. First to Rob DiPietro, who organized this thing 3 years ago and tries to wrangle 15 of us for a time that works. And then Ryan Roof, the true hero of the evening.
He's so the MVP.
We just say our picks via Zoom, and Ryan Roof has this Google sheet with like that mimic stickers, an actual draft board with color-coded positions that you would see on the NFBC. I don't know how he does this, but Ryan makes them all manually and somehow has to figure out which 150 players tomorrow night are going to be drafted in the player pool. 165. Yeah. Sorry for going 11 rounds. So I'm sure he'll miss some, but that is an undertaking in and of itself. So shout out to Ryan Roof, who puts together all these stickers and throws the Google sheet up, which I'm sure everyone listening, you will all be able to see the results of the draft sometime on either late into the night, Wednesday night, or on Thursday. But that creation is Ryan Roof's.
Yeah, I'll give Ryan Roof even more credit. Last year, in the 7 rounds we did, I think he only missed like 2 players he didn't have a sticker created for. Like, that is
impressive. It was impressive. Yeah. It was if it was me doing it, dude, I would.
Yeah,
it'd be a lot of misses, good. A lot of write-ins.
Giraldi's asking if there's a stream. Michael C. No, we all are in a Zoom together, and then I believe Rob like kind of chops that up and puts it down on a podcast of his own. And then, like, we'll have a recap. Other shows aren't even in the draft. We'll have a recap of it. It'll be all over talking points for a while, because most people don't have much to discuss as the season comes to an end. So,
it's
good content fodder.
That's how Rob has done it in the past. Yeah, he's chopped it as a pod. I'm not sure this year. I don't want to speak for him, but that's been the setup.
Yeah,
for the last couple of years.
Yeah, let's just kind of. You know, because we have the Zoom, like, videos are on, but we're not like focused on staring at a camera and talking to everybody. We're just kind of shooting the shit, like Ryan said, while we're drafting and trying to figure out if a player is alive. And then we laugh because, man, how'd this guy slip 5 rounds? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things. That will happen. All right. Let's go to some prep. We talked about the teams. We talked about the format. Let's talk strategy, prep, stuff like that. First off, you made projections. Enlighten me, my friend.
I didn't make projections. So my general plan for this was I took the BatX projections on Fangraphs for hitters, which is Derek Carty's concoction. And what that does is it basically combines the projected skill level for a player, but then also kind of starts to weave in how they've done in 2024. Because for me, that's always the hard part of this draft is how much do I weigh a player's 2024 performance before we have actual projections. So I feel like the BatX does that very well. So what I did, I just took the rest of the season BatX projections and gave everyone the same amount of playing time, because I'm not even going to try and figure out playing time, nor do I have the time to do that at all at this point. So I basically just took Derek's hitter projections, gave everyone equal playing time. And we're gonna kind of use that as a base just to get, you know, a list. That's the biggest thing I think when you're drafting blind is just a list of players to at least start from. You can nitpick the actual order or whatever, but have a bank of names that you can pick. And then I basically did the same thing on the pitcher side, added in a couple, you know, strikeout minus walk stuff from this year, but took Steamer projections and just took them out over a full season. And that's really all I did. It didn't take too long, but I'm guessing that's above and beyond what your prep has been so far.
Yeah, what I do when I draft in this league, to the surprise of nobody, by now at least regular listeners of the show, I basically find a player rater, and then I find last year's finishing ADP. I print both of them out, so I have two lists to correlate myself with. And like I just basically put stars next to guys I like in the first X amount of rounds. And it's like,
see, you were going down a good path, and so you start until you started talking about writing down stars, and so you print them out, right?
I print them out, so then I have both sheets next to me, and then I kind of cross-correlate. And by using both, then when I draft, I use just one sheet in the end. But I use both sheets to, like, the player rater to make sure I don't miss out on any guys that's really good that maybe deserve to go earlier. And then the ADP to also show, hey, these guys were good last year. Maybe they had a bad year, value, potentially, stuff along those lines. And I kind of cross-pollinate in that regard is the best way I guess I can say it.
That makes sense. That's what I did last year, honestly. I took the preseason rank, I took the year to date rank, and just kind of averaged them together, and that certainly works.
Because the joke behind that was, for people that know us by now, there's zero way I'm putting together any sort of like, hey, this is the rest of season numbers and correlated to this. Yeah, that was never happening. So
especially once you get to like, and at least this has been my experience, like the first round's easy. We'll talk about the first round tonight. It's like the fifth round, the sixth round, where we have not thought about which players you want to take in the fifth or sixth round or who's going to be available. So it's just nice to have a starting point to look at as you go.
Yep, most definitely. All right, so I guess one strategy point we can talk about for fun is it was a topic last year, and it comes up every year, and we always make the joke that as draft season goes on and the main event comes, starting pitching gets pushed up. But, you know, early drafts, starting pitching kind of is more abundant later on. But when you're doing a draft and hold format, again, no fab, you want a good stockpile of starting pitchers. Ask John Fish. This is kind of how it works. Do you take starting pitching early with the volatility of starting pitching that we've already talked about? Are you more inclined to go get an Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, when the Wheeler's got problems, maybe a Castillo, different guys like that? They are just durable. How are you approaching, without giving away everything, obviously, how are you approaching the starting pitching landscape?
It's freaking impossible, because we don't know which pitchers are going to be healthy this time next year. I mean, famously, to go back to Ryan Roof, he took Felix Bautista in like the middle of the second round, which was a fine pick at the time. Bautista was going, and then I think like a week later, it was Tommy John. And so like some of these pitchers that we're going to draft in these first four or five rounds or whatever are making it till opening day. And so it's easy to say, that's the game theory thing here, is like, it's easy to say, oh, I'm just gonna stock up on hitters and kind of fade pitchers and kind of think like the rest of the league is going to do that. Looking at the first two rounds of this draft last year, the only pitchers taken in the first two rounds were Strider Cole in the first round, and those guys didn't make it to opening day. Felix Bautista in the second didn't make it to opening day. And then Gausman barely made it to opening day. Luis Castillo, Emmanuel Clase. That was it. Those were the only pitchers in this league taken. So pitchers will get pushed down in this draft for that reason. I'd like to say my strategy, so to speak. So I have the third pick. I guess we'll talk about that in just a sec. But my impossible strategy is to at least try and draft starting pitchers who I think are durable and have racked up innings in recent years. So your guys like, and I've even bolded them on my sheet, like a George Kirby, a Zach Wheeler, again, even though a little shaky, the innings have been there. Framber Valdez has been there. I took Logan Webb in this league last year for that durability. Corbin Burns, Luis Castillo, again, even though like a down season, has been durable. Those types of guys, Aaron Nola that you mentioned, Bubba, I'm willing to forgive maybe a down year, maybe a drop in skill for someone who, again, I don't know if these guys are going to stay healthy, but have at least been healthy over the last 2-3 full seasons. I just think odds are a little bit better going that way. Could be wrong, probably will be wrong, but that's my general strategy here.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense because I know like last year I had the number one pick, so I went Acuna number one, of course. Mm-hmm. We saw how well that worked out. But then I went four bats early, and then I went, like I said, Alzolay and Yuri and Scherzer, not exactly in that order. I think it was Yuri, Scherzer, Alzolay, honestly, to finish things out. But I still have 46 hitting points and 46 pitching points as we're sitting here on Tuesday, August 20th. So the message I'm trying to say here is you can take pitching early. You still want some good pitchers. Like in my mind, Yuri was coming off an amazing year. Scherzer, mm-hmm. Okay, whatever.
Alzolay was the closer at the time and finished strong. Like
you're drafting 50 rounds, so these first 11 rounds are a ton of fun, but it's not the end all be all in the DC. When we come back and keep drafting in another month or whatever, you got to hammer home the reserve picks, and if you can do that, your kind of pluses and minuses to take part in this early draft kind of get crossed out. Because even, you know, honestly, with no Acuna, the fact that with no Acuna, Alzolay, Yuri, and Scherzer, four of my seven picks,
I don't know how you're
still be sitting sixth. I'm pretty pumped on that, to be honest.
I think most teams are like destroyed at this point. Yes. So you kind of mentioned John Fish earlier, and I'll bring that up. So John Fish is in third in this league. I'm in fourth, and John Fish can't field the starting rotation because they're literally all injured, and so he's not going to meet his innings minimum. So technically, I'm in third. In the NFBC, if you don't hit 950 innings on the season, you lose all of your points in ERA and WHIP. And so for him, that's going to be brutal. But you're right. I mean, you somewhat waited on pitching last year, Bubba, with Yuri, Scherzer, and Alzolay, and it didn't work out. But other folks went early pitching and didn't work out. It's just, what did I do? I took Devin Williams in the third. Didn't work out. Then follow that up with Logan Webb and Eflin. So I guess that's worked out pretty well. The other kind of going all over the board here, but the other consideration a little bit more last year was getting the 15th pick because of that delay between now and the end of the season. I was pretty high in KDS last year and I picked 15th. And so we only drafted those first seven rounds. The guy who slipped through the cracks those first seven rounds and I took in the first pick of the eighth was Tarik Skubal. So that
helps a ton.
That helped a ton. I don't know if that advantage is going to be as prevalent this year because we are going 11 rounds, but I do feel there will be for sure two, three names. Yeah. That slipped through. So that'll be an interesting one. But
speaking of KDS and our first round stuff, KDS is Kentucky Derby style. It's how we make our picks, essentially. The way we do it in this league is based on how you are in the standings. You get your first choice, so on and so forth. So, Ryan, you had, I think, the fourth choice in the draft, I think.
Yep.
So what did you decide?
Yeah, we decided to ignore Fish's innings deficiencies for KDS, which is cool, which is fine. So I had the fourth KDS pick and I went third. Taken already was 1-2 and I think 14. Yeah. I picked third. I think in hindsight I might have gone 15. We'll talk about it in a sec, but there was some debate whether we were doing 11 or 15 rounds at the time. And so I just figured I'd play it safe and take it third. It I don't know if I like three. I personally think Ohtani and Bobby Witt are the 1-2, 2-1 this year. I could be wrong with that. It's interesting. I put out a poll on Twitter earlier today, just kind of seeing what the vibe was, and said, you know, assuming Ohtani, Witt go 1-2, who's my pick at three? And I put Judge, Ellie De La Cruz, and Juan Soto as options. And it was Aaron Judge 41%, Ellie 33%, Juan Soto 24%, other 1%. So I'm going to have a decision to make between Ellie, I think, and Aaron Judge tomorrow night. I actually don't know which one I'm going to go with. I'm probably going to go Judge, but I almost feel like Ellie's safer. I just don't know if I can do it at three, and Aaron Judge has been so damn good in two of the last three seasons. But anyway, that was my thinking going into it. Get an early pick, go from there. And you've got the eighth pick in KDS. You were right after me in KDS, right?
Yeah, I was right after you in KDS, but in the spirit of content and something I said last year, because slow drafts are fine. They are what they are. I understand the point to slow drafts, but in a 15-team, 50-round DC, and even in the seven rounds we did live, drafting where I drafted really, like, it's how I got stuck with Owsley. Like, I liked Owsley. It was not my choice, but then I forced myself to take him because nothing was left type stuff. So I took eighth. I took smack dab in the middle. I didn't want to be I didn't want to get held out of runs, this, that, and the other. I didn't want to be right next to Ryan by picking fourth and kind of making this kind of really weird for the content stuff.
Pressure ourselves into taking Ringifo in the ninth round.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I wasn't over the moon with 15th because then again, I'm back on the end again. So I'm like, okay, I'll take eighth. I like the idea of eighth. I can go with the flow of the draft. It gives me time to kind of see what I want to hit, maybe see certain guys when I'm looking through, you know, through my stars on my sheet type thing. And so I went eighth. I like that middle pack there, because after the top three, as Ryan said with his decisions at four, it gets quite murky. And honestly, we're each going to do our, you know, top 15, what we think happens. I like the, like, 7 through 12 situation. There's a lot of options to take part there. So I'm actually kind of happy with the – I'm almost thinking I should have went 9th or 10th, but I'm pretty cool with the 8th one.
I think I'd rather have 8 than 3, to be honest. I think you're going to end up with a very good player at 8. I have no idea who's going to come back to you in the second round, but that's the same for every team. So I think you're going to be very happy with your first-round pick at 8.
Yep. Pretty pumped on that. You mentioned you were thinking about going 15th. So what was your reasoning for kind of wishing you went 15th now, even though it's going to be 11 rounds?
Really just to get that first slip through the cracks pick when we restart. I think that's a very valuable pick.
Yep.
Again, last year it netted me Tariq Skubal in the eighth round. Like, that's why I'm contending this season, or not contending, but that's why I'm
you cashing. Might still cash. You still might cash.
Yeah.
Well, you will, because Fish will be out of the way. Yeah.
Barring some disaster. But no, Jason DuPont and Steve Weimer, we should give credit, are basically battling out, like, have 120 points each. And I'm well back of that. But that was the reasoning for 15th. It's just you to get that first pick when we restart is huge.
Yep. I'm with you there. Really curious to see where things go. And trust me, everyone on every other show that was not in this draft will let us know, how did this guy got get picked? I remember seeing all those fun tweets. So
it's not easy, man, because we don't go like a minute. There's no real time clock, but it goes fast. And you're socializing, like yeah, people fall through.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see how that one plays out. Before we get into kind of our thoughts on this year's situation, I thought it'd be fun to quickly look back on the 2015 board, just for fun, real quick, and get first round per se, and kind of go over to, just to prove home the point of what can go right, what can go wrong situation. Well, round one, again, I took Acuna. We know how that went. But round two, the guy in first place took Shohei Ohtani. Jimmy Butler took Strider. J-Rod went 4, so 3 out of the first 4 picks, definitely not matching up to what you need. Mookie Betts went 5, and then Tatis went 6. So what are your thoughts on this first 6? Because really, like, one, maybe two guys panned out.
It's funny how much this deviates. Sometimes deviates from ADP, from the kind of end of draft season ADP, and sometimes doesn't. So, like, Steve Weimer taking Ohtani second, that did not happen at all in March. Ohtani was, I know there was kind of the gambling thing that took the ADP down for a little bit. People scared of that. But Otani was, what, like eighth or ninth in ADP, something like that. And Steve and had the foresight.
And we already knew he had to have surgery at that point. Mm-hmm. When we did this draft, he was already stopping pitching, and they hadn't even had surgery yet. And they didn't know what kind of surgery it was. There was a lot of question marks when he took him.
Exactly. So, like, for Steve to make that pick at two, like, if he made that pick in March, people would be like, what the hell? That was very illuminating this time last year. Jenny at three with Spencer Strider, just a bad break, but that's where Strider's ADP ended up in main event season. So she was right on with that. Same with Julio. He was right there. The only one that I think we quote unquote missed was Bobby Witt. Bobby Witt fell, I guess, to seventh, and Ryan Venancio took Bobby Witt seventh, and he was the one who kind of rose up by the end of draft season. I think was number 2-3 between Witt and Strider. So Witt was the real one, I think, who fell lower than ADP in this time last year.
Yep. And then DuPont at eight took Freeman, who hasn't really, you know, 16 homers, couple steals, but somehow DuPont still is in second place. That goes to show you that he had a great back end of the draft, more likely than not. J-Ram went ninth. I'm always a fan of J-Ram. Kyle Tucker went 10. Corbin Carroll went 11, and he's been a massive disappointment turning it on late, but you got Roof there at 11. Garrett Cole at 12. Yordan at 13. Albies all the way at 14. That says a lot, too. And then you had that great turn of Judge and Turner. That's helping. Man, your Judge Turner turn, not to mention you got Eflin and Webb, and then you got Scooble to start back up. That's not a bad first eight picks, my friend.
You did gloss over my 3-4 turn of Devin Williams and Cedric Mullins.
Who said I'm not a nice guy, you know? Just throw it out there.
I mean, but that is the thing with this draft. There are going to be some great values, and there are going to be some straight-up awful picks. Cedric Mullins, my pick of Mullins at 46 overall was the highest Mullins was taking all draft season. Just, again, you're drafting totally blind, and sometimes your perceptions are way off, so... I thought the Cedric Mullins first pick of the fourth round was pretty bad, but that's another thing for me, like not wanting to take Aaron Judge this year. Am I going to take the same guy I picked 15th last year at third? I mean, that shouldn't weigh into my mind, but it should not weigh in at all. But it's just interesting if I end up doing that. But Judge at 15 was awesome for me.
Soto went round three to James Anderson, 3.4.
He did. I vaguely remember that now. Yes, that's right. Juan Soto went in the third round. He fell big time to James.
Yep, that's pretty impressive stuff. And again, that's what's fun about these drafts, because you got the risers, you got the fallers, and you got the picks you make after that to make you feel better. So I don't know how much we wanted to dig into this. I just wanted to throw it out there and just give people an idea that a lot's going to go wrong when we do these 11 rounds, but it's a ton of fun and kind of sets gives you an idea at least what you need to do differently maybe in a month or
so. The other thing I'll add, and it's not really first round related, but kind of like the underrated unknown of this draft is two things, at least for me. A, who the free agents are. I have not researched who the free agents are coming up this season, which matters. And B, position eligibility.
Yes.
There is always guys who either add eligibility, but it's more the guys that lose eligibility. So, like, for example, Mookie Betts, I think, will lose second base. Yes. Ellie De La Cruz will lose third base. It's those things where, like, you don't know. At least I don't know. I'm not looking up players' position eligibility for 2025 at this point. But those two things, the upcoming free agents and the position eligibility, those sneak up to get me every year, because we're so ingrained on thinking this player on this team eligible at these positions all season long. And a lot of that changes next year.
Yes, it does. All right, let's have a little fun predicting the first round. And like one way, this is the 15 guys we think are in the first round. We're going to give them how we have them ranked 1-15, or I guess how we think they go in the first round, I should say, or maybe not. Ryan's just giving you his top 15.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. I have a bunch of names written down.
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Well, is this who we think's what we think's going to happen? That's how, yes, I kind of did it.
I did it how I think the top 15 picks go.
Okay. I'll just run through the obvious ones. Let me know if you disagree with any of these. But Judge, Witt, Otani, Ellie De La Cruz, Mookie, Soto. This isn't really in order, but it's just names. J-Ram, I think Gunnar is a for sure. Gunnar Henderson is a for sure first round pick. I think Freddie Freeman is still for sure first round pick.
I don't have him in my top 15.
There's our first disagreement. All right. So good. I'll flip it over to you then. Who are your next few names?
Looks, yeah, I have Otani, Witt, Judge, Henderson, Ellie, Betts, Soto, J-Ram, Tucker. And then I have some pitchers here. I have Paul Skeens.
I have two pitchers. Yep. I have Paul Skeens.
I do have Bryce Harper in the top 15.
Okay, I don't.
Okay. I have Trey Schuble in the top 15.
I do too.
I even put Zach Wheeler in the top 15.
I did not. He's becoming an old, but reliable. I could see it. I could see it. Yes.
And
yes.
And then my last two spots, I kind of had three names here. And it was tough for me to narrow down to two, but I had Yordan because people still love Yordan for some reason. I just can't do it. And then I was torn between, do I put Francisco Lindor into the first round, where I think he deserves it, or Rafael Devers. That was my 15.
Oh, okay.
But okay, so who else do you have after the ones that
you had Wheeler, Harper, Lindor, Devers, which I did not have on my list. Again, this is just who we think is going to go in the first round, where I had Freeman so far. I also had Schuble and Skeens. I think both of those guys will go near the back half of the first round in this draft and even higher next year once we get closer. I mean, that's what happens. I honestly have like some question marks, like Yordan. I think Yordan probably sneaks in. Is Julio Rodriguez a first rounder? I have him in, but it's freaking tricky. Why not Chris Sale? He's coming off a huge innings jump.
That's been 1 year. That's part of my concern is the health potential risk involved there. People know I'm risk averse when I draft, so that's probably my reasoning. But the dude's putting up a Cy Young season, so I can't argue it. But yeah, I could see the argument, but I'd rather take Wheeler over Sale.
You would take Wheeler over Sale. Yeah, I get it. I get that. More perceived safety there. The last name, again, I have a question mark after this guy because, again, I don't know. Is Jarren Duran a first rounder next year?
I'm not there yet. I can see the argument. He's more like that Michael Harris second round type guy to me. But okay. I get it. There's going to be a lot of that discussion too on draft day. He's more that second round guy that if he somehow fell into the third round, I'd be over the moon for type situation.
Yeah. Yep.
I have one kind of question mark for you. What's your thoughts on, say, you mentioned J-Rod, the other name that's not in the first round. I understand why he's not in the first round, but it just seems kind of funny as Fernando Tatis Jr.
I thought I mentioned him. I have a question mark next to him. I think because he's in the
if
mix.
He's healthy, he's still back. But I know it's an if healthy because that's been a problem for a couple of years now. I get it. But I think we can all agree, if healthy, the dude's like 30-30 guy.
Yep.
So
nope, I've got him right in there with Yordan, Tatis, Julio, Jarren Duran, Chris Sale as question marks, like guys I think might be in the mix. It's interesting, you know, the one guy neither of us have mentioned, and I don't think is even in consideration for the first round is Corbin Carroll. How far he has fallen, but wouldn't be surprised if he's second, third round, but not in the first. So, I think we have like a clear top given if we meld our two.
How do
lists,
you think the top six goes? Let's go that way.
Why don't we just do top eight? Because you're number eight. Okay.
That's fine.
I think it'll be Otani, Witt, Judge, Ellie, Mookie, Soto, J-Ram. That's seven. And you're going to have a decision between Gunnar Henderson, Tucker, Schuble, Skeens.
Okay, for me, I had it as Otani, Witt, 1-2, Judge, 3. I had Gunnar up to 4.
Okay, yeah.
I have Ellie, 5. I had Mookie, 6. I had Soto, 7. And in my dream scenario, I am debating between Kyle Tucker and Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, that would be a dream.
That's my
dream. I think J-Ram would be the move, but
I think
that
so
would
too,
be the dream.
It's I think that's where it sits, but then again, I wouldn't be shocked to say Skeens goes in the top 5 somehow, and now someone else is dropped back. Like, yeah. What if it's Soto, J-Ram Tucker? What if it's Betts, J-Ram Tucker? Because now we go back to, remember what we talked about before, how shortstop and middle infield all of a sudden recapping results from ADP, how bad that was. Now you have Betts as a shortstop eligible guy with outfield eligibility.
Yeah,
in a DC, that's tremendous. Like, tremendous stuff to have. Do I let that factor in over a Devers or a J-Ram? Or, I mean, a Tucker or a J-Ram? These are fun decisions to have on August 21st.
Yeah, I think you're going to be, I think worst case, you're ending up with J-Ram or Kyle Tucker.
Is a great
worst case scenario. Interesting we're on the same page on Kyle Tucker. We actually don't know if his shin will be healed by the time next March comes around. But neither of us are holding that injury against Tucker. And Tucker, before the injury, was a top five player.
He's an MVP candidate.
Yeah. So it's interesting. A clear top eight, I think, and then Scooble Skeens. I don't think they go that early in this draft just because we're so far away, but I do think they are for sure first rounders. And then it's just interesting that kind of hodgepodge of names that we threw out near the back half of the first round and around the bend. Freddie Freeman, Yordan Alvarez, Tatis, J-Rod, Wheeler, Harper, Lindor, Devers, like that. I think a lot of folks drafting 13, 14, 15 are going to have some pretty sweet, and it always kind of looks that way, in my opinion, early in draft season, some pretty sweet pairings, 1-2 pairings on that end of first round, start of second round turn.
Yeah, it'll make things really interesting. Like, I already left
out a name. Scott in the chat. When is Acuna going? How could I not do Acuna?
That's a fun one as well.
He's got to be in the first round, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's back into the first round.
See? Guys fall through the cracks. Yeah, Acuna's a first rounder.
I knew I wouldn't be going for him because where I'm drafting, I'm not taking him at eight. But I could see a world, let's just say, where things get interesting with Acuna potentially finding his way into a situation like that. So I'm just trying to spitball it in my head. I don't know what you just said.
Then
I feel like I'm a presidential candidate right now trying to talk. But God damn it, Dr. Fauci.
I don't think you know what you said in that last sentence either.
Yeah, it's just I zigged. It was crazy, guys. I was not going to take Acuna at eight, so I wasn't even factoring Acuna into my head, is what I'm going to say.
That was a lot more straightforward than your first attempt.
You're welcome. Yes, but yeah, he's one that he worries me just because I know he's done it before, but now it's a second knee injury. Does he still run the way he ran before? Like, that's my only concern. I think he should, but how do we know at this point in time, to say the least?
I'd still take, if I'm at eight, I'd still take J-Ram or Tucker over Acuna personally, but I think Acuna will go in the top eight, to be honest.
Yep, I'm with you there. I'm just going to kind of going through some listener stuff here. Michael C. says Duran has done more than Harris lead off on lockdown. I agree. I'm just comparing Duran to how Harris jumped in the draft last year. Michael C. says Corbin Carroll or Jackson Chourio? I still think it's Corbin Carroll, but it's a lot closer than it once was. And I could see Jackson Chourio finding his way into that Randy Rosarena world, which maybe is where Corbin Carroll ends up. So it's actually a pretty fair question.
Yep. Beanable in the chat. We did not mention Vladimir Guerrero, who I think is an early second rounder. I think is one of those when you're at the 1-2 turn is absolutely a consideration. So good call by Beanable there, given the absolute tear Vladdy is on.
Like, in an amazing world, I'd hope he falls to me in the middle of the second round. I don't think he will. But, like, when I'm thinking first base off the top of my head, if you still want to take Freeman early, I'm fine with that. He's still an amazing guy, offensive player. I have Vladdy number two at first base. Or I guess Harper's first base, too, so I have him third at first base. I have him ahead of Olsen. I have him ahead of Pete Alonso. So I understand the question. But, yeah, I'm with you. Early second, mid second should be where Vladito takes off for sure.
Uncle Ted throwing out names, but one of the good ones is Ketel Marte, we brought up at the start of the show. You know, I mentioned he was the number 11 fantasy player and just had this kind of fluky injury. Why isn't he considered? For me, it's the risk of regression in the track record, but I Ketel Marte will be right there, I think, in the second round as well. It kind of sounds like there's a really good top 20.
Yeah, which 22. Almost falls into my lap.
Yeah, your second round pick, and in these drafts, we have no idea what the second round will be, but your second round pick could be either really good or really frustrating if you miss out on all these guys.
Yep, it's going to be fun. That's the way I'm looking at it. We're going to have fun, Ryan. Fun stuff there. All right, let's just have some fun rapid firing some things here. And we'll talk about some players that we might be interested in where they go because of these tough questions. Let's start with some of the prospects, the Jacksons. Let's start with Jackson Trio. I said he goes around that Arozarena world. So just I'll say he's around 45th, give or take, 5-10 picks. So somewhere in that realm. How do you feel about Jackson Trio this upcoming draft?
That sounds about right. I think Trio will be like a third rounder, something like that, just given the maybe third, fourth round, just given the ceiling and given the in-season improvement that we've seen. I want to give a shout out to Randy Haynes on Twitter. He did a little exercise with Rob DiPietro. They did over unders on a bunch of these guys, and they had Trio at 51 as their over under, which is kind of similar to what we're saying, like early fourth round for Jackson Trio. Yep. I don't know if I'm going to do that. I have no idea, but that seems about right.
Yep. No, I like that one quite a bit. Let's talk Jackson Holiday, who second come around has looked pretty darn good, and a full season of this would be amazing. So I'm thinking we're talking around 60th. Maybe I'm too aggressive there.
I think so. I think more like 100. I could be way wrong. I just think we need to see, and I'd say so much depends on these last 5-6 weeks, what Jackson Holiday does. I don't think we can put too much stock in what we've seen from Holiday. He's only been back up, what, a week or two?
Yeah.
So that's not enough for me to put Jackson out. And again, knowing the way I draft, I don't take these guys really that early in draft. So I think Jackson Holiday is more like a top 100 type of guy. We haven't seen, compared to Trio, we have not seen the rebound for nearly as long as we have with Jackson Holiday.
All right, what about Wyatt Langford, who he's been better the second go around to me. He's still not lighting the world on fire, so he's around a top 100 pick for me, but I think there's some people that still like him quite a bit.
Agreed. I don't think Rob or Randy did Wyatt Langford. I don't see him on this list. I just think it's, I don't know. I guess I take him over Jackson Holiday. So I guess I'll say like 90.
Ooh, really? That's a fun one. I'm almost ready to make a beer bet already. This is exciting.
Oh no, we're not doing 20.
We're not doing 2025 beer bets. But like that's what I want to keep at the back of my mind for a later date and time. That's a fun one right there. What about James Wood, who's been on an absolute tear since quote unquote figuring things out?
So would you take James Wood before Langford or Holiday?
Yes.
At this point,
I think James Wood is a top 50 pick for me.
Ooh, top 50.
Yeah, I'd have him right behind. I'd have him just a little bit behind Jackson Trio.
Okay. That order makes sense. Trio, Wood, and then Holiday. And Langford, whatever. I'm with that. I don't know. Top 50 is crazy, but that's maybe not crazy because James
Jackson
Wood.
Jackson Trio's 45th. You're talking, so pick 50 to 60, somewhere in that realm. So somewhere in the back end around four. Like, yep. That seems pretty normal.
Which is where I'm at. But that's the thing. Like, I don't know. I want to say, I have no idea how tomorrow night will go. I want to say I'll start with three hitters and I'll just take the best pitcher at 4 and 5 at that point. So I'm not going to be really looking at a hitter, but we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I want to be a little more aggressive early on, like not go crazy off the board, but knowing that it's 50 rounds and I know depth, at least not as good as some other guys play, but I'm comfortable in my depth drafting that I might take a few more chances early on with guys like a rookie, like a Woods, or, we didn't even talk Royce Lewis, healthy. Royce Lewis is a first round pick, but will he stay healthy? Do you take that risk type situation? So that kind of plays into like the injured guys and the prospects. Do you kind of believe in those situations, I guess? Speaking of down bats from last year, Corbin Carroll, where did we think he's going around pick 60 or so? 45, 60, 45, 50 maybe?
I honestly, dude, I'm thinking about him at the 2-3. Because I don't think
I'm not opposed to it.
I'm thinking about it. I mean, this is someone who is 23 years old, was a top five pick this time, you know, entering the season. Obviously, if I go Ellie De La Cruz with the third overall pick, I'm not going to take Carroll. But someone I'm thinking about at the 2-3, you're obviously banking that the shoulder long term is going to be okay. If it is, you're getting a top five, top 10 player in the second or third round, which is kind of what we saw last year with James and Juan Soto. So yeah, I'm thinking maybe I'm bullish on Carroll, but I just, if you play that rebound card, assuming health with the shoulder, there's no one better to play that rebound card with.
Yeah, I don't hate that, honestly. I think that's probably it's a valid point. I will support your claim on that one. So my question for you, let's have fun here. J-Rod, would you rather have Corbin Carroll or J-Rod next year?
J-Rod. J-Rod won't be available to me in the second round.
I know. I'm just saying, like, in a bubble, if you had to pick between the two, you still take J-Rod. Because
yes,
the lack of power this year without a real injury scares the crap out of me. I know it's just 1 year. I still believe he's a hell of a ball player. But, man, like, what happened?
I don't know.
Just love, like, some kind of explanation there, and I'll probably never, ever get one. But it stood out to me, like, what is going on in this situation?
It's bizarre for someone who went 30-30 last year and really for 2 years has been good with this pedigree at this age for that to fall. So
yeah,
I'm pretty confident this was your buying coming off of a very, very down year, maybe Julio's worst year that he'll have in some time.
Yeah, that is very fair. What about Matty Olson? What are we doing here? Cause this year was quite the fall from grace.
I know. I don't think I'm taking Olsen second at the 2-3 turn. He probably ends up in like the third round.
Yeah.
We talked about Austin Riley at the top. Who would you rather, Riley or Olsen?
I think I'd rather Riley just because we saw it, but
yeah, a little bit of it. Yeah.
You're probably still grasping at straws between the two, to be real. They're both pretty, both of them have shown they can be bad and then get really good again. Olsen's done this in his career, a down season and put together an MVP season. So none of it's impossible to see.
Yeah, and I think what was Matt Olson has been extremely, extremely up and down. The year, that was the COVID year, but his batting average last few years in 2021, it was 271, then 240, then 283, then 230. Could very well be 270 again for Matt Olson next year. We don't know, but he has shown the ability to be really good for a couple of years now. It's just I don't think he's the batting average guy, and there's no steals. I think at least got to give me four categories that I think will be good that early in the draft.
That's fair. And last but not least on this category here, what are we doing with Mike Trout? Does he even go through 11 rounds on Wednesday?
He'll go. I think. Yeah, he'll go.
What round?
Ninth, tenth, ninth, yeah. Something like that.
I'm thinking ninth or tenth. Which is that's how the mighty have fallen, and I don't know if I can do it.
Right. That's where I'm thinking is like, I mean, with these DCs, I want to get like in the first 11 rounds, I want to get four or five pitchers. I want to get those early round bats. I want to get a catcher too, just to, you know, keep you happy. There's not much room for taking shots at injury risks this early in a draft season. You're already going to be drafting injured guys in these first 11 rounds. We don't know who they are yet. To take Mike Trout on top of that for me is tough. But I do think he'll go in the first 11. He probably should. I just don't know if I'm doing it.
Yeah, no, that's my conundrum with Mike Trout. It's a tough one, to say the least. Let's talk about some bad starting pitchers this season, or at least early starting pitchers. Pablo Lopez, do we buy into the underlying metrics that have been so good for a bounce back season? I'm pretty sure I know where this might be your 2-3 turn.
Yeah, I was thinking about Pablo earlier today. I mean, I think about Pablo every day.
You don't have to, we all do that already. We'll do that.
We'll spare the deeper details there, yeah. But I was thinking about Pablo.
No wonder the pipes burst downstairs.
Damn, man. Hopefully no one's listening at this point, but I don't think. When I was thinking about Pablo earlier, I can't do him at the 2-3, but I can go with the 4-5.
Yeah,
I'll do him at the 4-5.
I think four or five is the way to go. I'm with you on that one. Kevin Gausman, this is a tough one. This is the guy I was buying in on, thinking I was getting a discount. He's going to be back. He's going to be healthy. He's going to be good. He's been good. Just doesn't strike anybody out. He's like a good SP3. He's not an ace right now.
Yeah.
And I'm having a hard time. Will he return to be that ace next year is my question. So for Kevin Gausman, he's got to be like a sixth round pick for me type guy. Like if I drafted like I did last year and picked four hitters out the gate, okay, Gausman's my SP1 or SP2. That's probably where I think he goes.
Agreed. I think like a fifth, sixth round on Gausman, and I would take Pablo ahead of Gausman for sure. I shouldn't keep taking this conversation back to Pablo Lopez, but I just did. I just think there's some real risk with Gausman that this is like the beginning of the end, as morbid that as that sounds. Like, he's starting to get up there. He depends so much on the splitter, which hinges on the fastball. The velocity was down. He's had shoulder problems recently. For all those reasons, I think Gausman, like, I don't even know if I'd consider him at the 4-5 for me, maybe the 6-7, but I don't know.
Yeah. Like, he might be, if he's sitting there middle round six for me, that's when it could get interesting for Kevin Gausman. Let's talk Zach Gallen. He's been hurt. He's been up and down, just got blown up last week. Before this year, he was basically a spitting image of innings, just doing it and doing it well. So what's your thoughts on Zach Gallen?
Where did he go last year? He went in the middle of the third round to our first place team. I think Gallen, I mean, Gallen's been a tale of two seasons. Like, he has been awful since, I think he went on the IL May 31st with a hamstring and has not come back and looked good at all. Given that there have been a lot of innings on Zach Gallen's arm in recent seasons, I'd say fourth, fifth round, something like that.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. I'd be wary for the SP1 crown. He's ahead of Gausman, but behind Pablo is the way I look at for Zach Gallen. Bobby Miller, just for fun, I threw this one in here. Is he even on the top 11 rounds?
Not
for someone's me. Gonna buy a bounce back. They all will.
Maybe. I don't think Bobby Miller goes tomorrow night. I could be wrong. That's the thing. We don't know how deep. What's that?
That's bold. I like it, but it I think it's bold.
I don't know. We have no idea how like deep the starting pitcher pool is right now. So maybe he goes, but it's just been so bad, but I certainly see the reason for thinking there's a bounce back in there. It's just, I don't know. Nah, I don't, I'll stand by it. I don't think Bobby Miller goes tomorrow night.
What about Walker Buehler?
I don't think so.
Yeah. So that's amazing from last season to this season, both of them outside the top 150.
I'd throw a dart at Bobby Miller before I would Walker Buehler for sure though.
Very intriguing. In the chat here, Michael C. says, where did it go? Trey Turner, it is. Trey Turner in the second. Turner or C.J. Abrams? That's fun.
Yeah, I would think they go very close to each other, and I think they're both second rounders, in my opinion.
The answer is Tyler Fitzgerald later.
Oh, God. You did have a good tweet about him earlier today. That was crazy. I don't know who I'd go. It's for me, that's very close. I think I'd go Trey Turner. Or no, I think I'd go C.J. Abrams, but kind of flip-flop. I may have to make that call at the 2-3 between those guys.
Yeah, you had Turner last year at the end of the 1-2, so if he falls the 2-3, it's got to make you feel, I guess,
he's good. He's not old, is he? He'll be 31?
That's young. He's good. He's no C.J. Abrams, but age-wise.
It will be Trey Turner's age 32 season next year. Only has 14 steals. I would go C.J. Abrams over Trey Turner right now. I don't know if that stolen base total, which has been at or above 30 pretty much on average these past three seasons, now at 14. I don't know how much that bounces back. And I guess he did miss a ton of time with the injury. So that's 14 and 374 plate appearances. So maybe it's not that bad, but for someone where the speed game is his main thing, I'd rather take the whatever 23-year-old than the 32-year-old.
The younger player. I'll take C.J. Abrams in this one too. And that's crazy to think of this conversation, but here we are in 2025. A couple of more here, some injured pitchers, Spencer Strider. Where do we think we see him? Cause he should be back I'd imagine a couple months into the season, does he get taken on? He's got to be a top 11 round pick, right?
Yeah, he'll go. And I trying to seventh round.
That's what I'm thinking, seventh or eighth. When guys like some teams either SP2 or SP3. Somebody will try him as an SP3, and it's a heck of an SP3 if he only misses 2 months or something.
Yeah, maybe seven. Well, maybe seven's a little aggressive if he. Yeah,
I don't
for
know
some reason I keep thinking it's opening day, but it's not. It's a couple months. You're right.
Yeah, because it's usually a year after the injury, so I'm thinking it's at least a month, probably 2 months into the season. Is my guess.
He did have the brace, I believe, so that helps. But I don't know. I think Strider goes. I think Strider. Maybe not seventh. Maybe I'll revise to ninth.
What about Yamamoto, who is due back here before the season's over?
I know, and that's another one where it's going to be like off-season draft. True off-season drafters will have the ability to see what Yamamoto looks like, or if there's another setback, and then the Yamamoto pick tomorrow night looks terrible. Yeah, exactly. I have no idea where Yamamoto will go. I'll guess fifth or sixth.
But that's a fun gamble right there, folks. That's a fun gamble.
It's a gamble, and again, gambling this early in draft season when you know other guys are going to be hurt, it's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to try and prioritize stability.
What about DeGrom? He's going to start here in September.
Man, tomorrow night is going to be fun. I'm not even going to answer that question. Tomorrow night's going to be a freaking blast.
Yeah. So I was mentioning Scherzer, Lizardo, Sandy, Yuri, so the Marlins. Yu Darvish could be back soon. There's tons of injured guys. Like Michael C. says, what about Glasnow? Well, mm-hmm. I think Glasnow's back this year, so I wouldn't get too concerned there. But
Glasnow's one you could take in like the third round tomorrow night because we don't know what the elbow is right now and looks like he could be a first-round pitcher if he comes back healthy and finishes the season strong, looks good in the postseason. So Glasnow is definitely one of those, like while we're drafting, while there's injury concerns, like at that second, man, yeah, boom or bust.
Yep, boom or bust is correct, but should be a fun one. That was a little bit of our preview. Hopefully it helped out and people had some fun with that. But before we do listener questions, any final thoughts before we draft tomorrow evening, 2025, too early, DC?
I guess the only thing we didn't really talk about outside of catchers, of course, but we'll give you that, is closers. Closers tend to go super early in this just because people want to get a guy. It's even harder to do in August. So that's something you got to figure out too. You're going to take a closer in the top five rounds, because that's probably where you're going to have to go to take a closer in this psychotic league we're joining. But outside of that, I don't have much.
Yep. It's going to be a fun one. So let's get to some of the listener questions here before we head on out. Our buddy MS at SMMS 79, will there be a stream? The Gens want to know. I don't think so. Don't think so, my friend. We got our boy BP at futures_bet. I have a very cheap Royce Lewis in a 15 team keeper league. Let's pray that he plays to 135 to 140 games. What's the outlook?
On who? Sorry.
Royce Lewis. Have you played?
He's got, no, we didn't even bring him up.
I mentioned him briefly when we were talking about something. Yeah. I said, if he's healthy, he's an easy first round pick.
Well, yeah, but
That's a big if. Big if. But so the question here is, Royce Lewis in a 14-team keeper league. So let's pray he plays 135 to 140 games. What's the outlook? Thank you.
If he plays 140 games, the outlook is fantastic. And I think if we're
top five, definitely,
top 10, bordering top five, Royce Lewis is that good. We probably should have looped Royce Lewis into that like top 20, top 25. Group that we were talking about earlier. It's not a pick either one of us is going to make. I'll speak for you, but I think Royce Lewis will be a consideration there.
Yeah, we'll see. Speak for yourself. Our buddy Ben Tid, you guys don't have to go into specifics, but do you plan on drafting similarly to what your general strategy was the past draft season, or did anything this season cause you to want to try something different?
No. Not really. I think generally my strategy is as we get closer to opening day, I'll push starting pitchers up, which is nothing. I mean, this is nothing groundbreaking, and kind of focus on, as we're further away from opening day, focus on health, try to mitigate risk as much as possible, because we know it's going to come. So I'm already risk averse drafter to begin with, even more so than what we'll see with my picks, I think, tomorrow night. Unless I have too many, hazies and then just screw it, throw it out the window.
Now we're talking. Now we're talking. Pablo Lopez, first overall. Michael Cicchini says, let's go. I'm envious. Pretty distinct 1-3 in my opinion, from 4-9 could slot in a number of ways. So would you take Gunner, who's clearly not even in his prime yet, or J-Ram, who we know will do all the roto things? I think I've turned my opinion on Gunner. I have him 4th in this. I would go Gunner, but J-Ram is pretty much as safe as it comes.
Yeah, I would go, God, I'd probably go Gunner. It's close. Gunner's number 6 overall this year.
Yeah.
J-Ram's 4th.
I was going to say, it's, yeah, and which player rater are you using?
Razzball.
Yeah, I did Razzball 15-team standard. Yeah, it's, say we're on the same one, then 4th and 6th. That's pretty wild. Pretty wild to see Soto 5. Marcelo Zuna, 7th, never even discussed on the show.
So never even discussed him. He would go 3rd, 4th, something like that.
Yeah, 3rd, 4th, easily.
We probably should have written all this down, but.
Nah, what's the fun in having accountability? People will tell us we're right and wrong.
That's right.
We're all good there.
Michael in the chat, this is one. When I mentioned pitchers who I feel like I can trust at the top of the show, Michael mentions Logan Gilbert, who leads majors in WHIP with 0.88. It's funny. I think of Logan Gilbert as a super stable guy. The innings have absolutely been there. I'll go back to that top 10 fastball velocity leaderboard where all 10 are on the IL. Logan Gilbert throws the ball damn hard. And I think that knocks him down a little bit for me, even though the innings have been there. I don't know how long that body can take that. Hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong too, but I totally understand where you're coming from, because let's just be honest, the evidence has spoken for itself in this one. Yeah. And it's hard to deny after this. Not like it's been one or two guys. It's literally, like you said, Will's list, all of them. All of them.
And that I think all of them outside of Garrett Cole are
still out.
Yeah.
And Will Harris, I'm pretty sure, posted that at first list way back when, like when there's one or two guys hurt and everyone was drooling over velocity. He tweeted that out then, and he just updates it with new crossed out names every time one hits the skids. So yep.
it wasn't
like this was just put out like on the last set of injuries. It's been an ongoing theme all season. So
okay, and so just to follow up on, I found Joe Arrico's tweet that and he says, maybe somewhat in jest, but maybe not. He says, I guess this is the 2025 starting pitcher fade list at this point. It's that same top 10 of fastball velocity, except it's this year. It's Paul Skeens, Jose Soriano, Hunter Green, Jared Jones, Garrett Crochet, Dylan Cease, Tarik Skubal, Luis Gil, Logan Gilbert, and Tyler Glasnow.
So Glasnow's already banged up. Jones is already banged up. I think Eel was hurt for a second. That's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's hard to fade the best pitchers because they throw so damn hard. And fastball velocity is not the only thing that contributes to injury. I don't want to kind of throw that out there. But the 10 for 10 this past year, I mean, that's pretty compelling.
You know, the real discussion point we forgot to mention, the A's will be in Sacramento, so Brent Rooker is now a certified second-round pick. No, I'm just kidding.
He'll go tomorrow.
He'll go. He'll be like a 4th or 5th round pick. I'm like, what's the difference between him and Ozuna, really? Besides maybe a little batting average. Like, they're pretty much the same player.
Track record. Ozuna's been good for a while.
Yeah.
Rooker, it's a 1-year thing.
Nah, it's a 2-year thing, though. He's an all-star. I'll give him 2 years. Now he goes to the best hitting ballpark in baseball. So it's going to be fun.
Yep. Yeah. Seeing which A's, well, jeez. I don't know how many A's will go tomorrow night.
No.
It might just be Rooker. Mason Miller, of course, but
yeah, Miller will go and Rooker probably it, but you never know. Someone might get feisty with a Lawrence Butler or a JJ Bleda when they probably shouldn't, but you never know. You never know. We're on 11 rounds. A lot of us going in pretty blind, especially as the draft goes on. So It'll be a ton of fun, but Ryan, we'll wrap it up there. Again, I'll ask you one last time, any final thoughts?
No, I'm done. I need to dry out my carpet, finish that out, and we'll be ready for draft night tomorrow night.
Sounds like a blast. Make sure y'all follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Entrick. We'll be back with you guys Thursday for your week 23 fab preview. And next Tuesday, we'll recap this draft on the show. But for now, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 162. Catch y'all next time.